What's up, knife freaks, sharpness geeks, and purveyors of stabbing goodness? Welcome to the Knife Freak Show. My name is Jonathan McNeese, and my co-host, Mr. Chase Boatwright, is in person today.
How you doing?
I'm good. This is a nice little change up here.
Yeah.
So we had some stuff going on and worked out that Chase was able to come down and do the podcast, and we'll be filling you guys in on what's going on, the real reason behind this, very soon. So it's super exciting. So just hang tight for that.
Yeah.
But as it is, it worked out that we were able to do this. So the trade-off, I guess, is that today we don't have a ton of time to sneak this in today. So we're going to try to keep this one kind of short and sweet.
Yep.
And I believe Chase has got some questions that you guys have been asking. And we're going to do basically a short and sweet question and answer session. So.
For sure.
Let's jump right into it.
Yeah. So all these questions are from Mr. W.L. Ray, a very good listener and supporter of both of us, and got to meet him at Blade Show this year, and always appreciate his input and, you know, questions and that sort of stuff,
because they're
always very well thought out and stuff like that. So,
yep.
First one, there is much discussion everywhere about HRC. What do y'all think is optimal, and just how important is it for routine daily use, such as opening packages and other light cutting tasks? Also, please discuss your favorite steel and why. I suppose y'all can beat this to death. I suspect y'all can beat this to death. We could. So first off, as far as what is optimal, that all depends on the steel. There is no magic number that is optimal for every steel out there. Just wanted to go ahead and put that right out in the open. Any thoughts on that?
No, 100%. So look, there are a ton of different factors that go into how a steel performs.
Yes.
All right. And all the different steels are essentially different recipes of combinations of materials. Right. And so what, an HRC at one number, say 63 on one steel, might be close to its optimal, you know, and I say that with air quotes because even that, we'll get into it, but there's even more factors than that.
Yeah.
But, and what might truly be close to optimal for one steel might be horrible for another steel because they all have different traits, right? Some steels have more toughness. Some steels have more wear resistance and different things like that. And the, stain resistance, all that.
Yep.
And when you start playing with the temperatures, which is what results in the HRC,
it
changes those traits. All right. And so a trait in other words, one steel that might perform great at say 63, if you heated a different steel to 63, it might chip on you the first time you use it. Right. There's a lot of them that would.
Yeah.
Like it's only been in recent years that we started getting some of these steels that actually performed well at the really high hardness levels like that. I mean, for years, guys, like 59 to 60 was a hard knife blade.
Yeah.
Like this 63, 64 stuff that we're seeing now with MagnaCut and some of the other ones are that's pretty new.
Yeah.
And because if you would have heated those other steels, some of those you could have gotten to that hardness, but if you did, you were having the trade-off of, like, it was more than likely going to be too brittle on most of them.
I mean, that's – a lot of steels have what they call a working hardness on the data sheet. And, you know, that doesn't mean they can't get higher, but that's sort of where, you know, their – that cross-section of toughness, chippiness, you know, edge retention sort of starts tapering off in one direction or another. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a case of more is better.
Definitely right? not.
Even with the steels that, you know, even like MagnaCut, like it's, they all basically have a sweet spot, right? And that sweet spot is determined by, you know, basically trial and error, figuring out, you know, the right balance. And so, but at the same time, the right sweet spot for one person and for one task might not be the right sweet spot for the next person and nor the next task.
Yeah.
Because it depends on what you're going to be using your knife for. You know, if you're using a knife that's heat treated to say MagnaCut at 63 to 64. So you're using that's a pretty good all around, but maybe you're somebody that, you know, uses your knife a lot. Maybe you use it to cut up a whole bunch of cardboard. Well, Magna Cut has good edge retention at 63 to 64, but it's still going to dull, especially if you're cutting up something like a bunch of cardboard.
Yep.
And so it kind of depends on like your skill level and your equipment level and all that on resharpening, you know, of you might prefer that it actually is a little less wear resistant, but easier to sharpen, you know, while the next person might be great at sharpening or love sharpening or whatever, or have the right equipment to do it pretty quick and easy. And they might not pay that much attention to it, and they just want it to have the most wear resistance that it can possibly have. And so all of that stuff is a factor in it. I mean, the end use of the knife and the end user are a big part of it. And again, steels are not at all the same. They're all a recipe, a very, you know, specific, you know, thought out recipe to get them for whatever, you know, like for Magna Cut, it was specifically thought out and come up with to be what Larry and Thomas thought would be the ultimate properties for a knife steel, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, and then he, my understanding, basically he's where we got the sweet spot that it's, you know, from all of his testing and, you know, for all the different features that he wanted it to have, the testing resulted in that sweet spot of like 63 to 64. But other steels, like I said, if you took them to 63 to 64, would perform horribly. Like, that would not be their sweet spot. But if that steel...
Or they would perform poorly at, you know, like, they may perform great at a given task, like cutting Amazon boxes open all day. Cool. But, you take it out, you know, camping and try to do anything against wood or hard material like right. that, and you all of a sudden have lost, you know, a quarter-sized chunk of your blade.
Right.
Because it's too hard. It's not tough enough to withstand that sort of use.
Right.
Right. But, yeah. Sorry.
So yeah, no, that's exactly. I mean, it all depends on the task. It depends on the steel, and like they're just, you know, they're just not all the same. So there definitely cannot be a singular, you know, HRC that's the best across the board.
Yeah.
100%. And you might have one steel whose sweet spot, say, you know, Magna Cut 63 to 64. You might have another steel whose sweet spot is 59 to 60. And if you put those steels up against each other and started testing them, they might actually test pretty close as far as their performance results, that, you know, despite having a 3, 4, 5 degree discrepancy in the hardness, that doesn't really matter that much as much as it being in the sweet spot for that steel mm-hmm. to perform the task that you're wanting to perform for it. So you want to, you know, again, so think about it like this. You know, if you're out here at the local drag strip running a car and, you know, you're trying to win a drag race, you need a specific type of tires on the car. You do not need those same tires on the car if you're going down here to the local mud race and you're trying to run your 4x4, you know, through a mud pit.
Yeah.
Two completely different tasks, you know. So that would be like saying, what's the best tire for racing? Well, depends on what kind of racing you're doing.
Yeah.
If you're racing, you know, and same thing, you know, drag strip versus, you know, like NASCAR, you know, two different kinds of tires are going to be on there. You know, so there's not a one perfect solution for everything. It just depends on the steel. So, like, you know, in other words, depends on the car yeah. that you're putting it on, you know, depends on the task that you're going to be using it for. Same thing with the knife steel. Depends on the steel that you're using and what the end use is going to be.
Yeah,
the task you're going to put it to.
And so, I will say one last thing on that is, just because, you know, a knife steel is at 62 HRC or 64 HRC, pick a number, just because they are at 64 HRC, ABL at 64 HRC, and Magna Cut at 64 HRC are not necessarily going to perform exactly the same, because they are different compositions of material. Right. They have different formulas therein. Just because you cook a pizza at 400 for 15 minutes and a cake at 400 for 15 minutes does not mean those two things are going to taste the same.
Right.
It's, you know, that's what you're dealing with here. It's not necessarily, you know, the end result of how hard it is. It's how those things are composed within them that make up the performance. And then of course the geometry and all the other things that go into it.
Right.
So
essentially, the hardness is essentially a measurable indicator of where that steel is at for its specific recipe. Mm-hmm. Right. So like it gives you an idea of, okay, this steel, and again, through testing and stuff, like back to Magna Cut, you know, Larry and Thomas tested it and determined that that, you know, there was a sweet spot for it. That sweet spot for that steel is great, but it's still specific to that blend of materials that, that make that steel. Mm-hmm. So I think that explains it pretty well.
Yeah. All right. So next part of that question, do you have a favorite steel and why?
Yes and no. This before, but. Yeah. Yes and no. It again, it goes back to what I'm planning on using the knife for. You know, if it comes, if, you know, and whether we're talking about on a knife that I'm going to use or whether we're talking about me,
getting spam phone calls.
Getting spam. Dude, it has been nonstop. Sorry.
I think that's the eighth one since I've been here. Yeah.
It's been awful. Anyway, so the depends on whether you're talking about from the aspect of me using a knife steel or working with a knife steel, because those are two different things. Because some of the really high performing steels are also a total pain in the ass to work with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I may dislike it from a maker standpoint, but love it from a user standpoint and vice versa. So
that's 3B for me.
Yeah. And I do. So again, for my pocket knives at this point, I'm on the MagnaCut train. I like MagnaCut a lot. There's other steels I really like, but MagnaCut's pretty hard to beat at this point for me. For a fixed blade, it would kind of depend. If it was like a small, you know, like pocket size fixed blade, maybe I'd probably still go with MagnaCut. You start getting up into some of the bigger fixed blades and stuff, especially if I'm going to be using it for chopping and stuff like that, I'd probably take 3B all day. So it's just, I like that steel a lot. It takes a really good edge. And then there's other steels that I like for various reasons, but if I had to pick two for a pocket knife, probably MagnaCut. For a medium to bigger fixed blade, I'd probably pick 3B.
I agree. I mean, good choices. If I had to take just one steel, I would probably still delineate if I could, but CTS XHP has always been one of my favorites, especially as a user. That was the first, I think, powder metallurgy, like super steel I ever owned in a knife, in a cold steel Code 4 back in the day. And I used the crap out of that thing, and I loved it. And I still love it even as a maker, as you know, like it, I love working with it. I love using it. It's really great steel all the way around. And if I had to go more tool steel chopping, you know, toughness, even on a folder or small fixed blade, I like CPM Crew Wear, which is very, very close to 3B. It's just like the edge retention and toughness slap, like get moved, you know, like 1 point, you know, sort of one way or another. I think Crew Wear technically has a little bit better edge retention, a little bit less toughness, whereas 3B is the opposite. So, you know, that's sort of where I land, is basically in the same boat, you know, sort of a good all-around stainless and, you know, very tough, awesome tool steel. So, yeah.
All right.
Next question. Are there any new developments, either current or on the horizon, with regards to knife making, including but not limited to steels, knife making materials, such as scales and other components, lock designs, deployment methods, or anything else you can think?
Wait, what?
That's a loaded question.
Is there anything new on the horizon? So what, are we asking like new stuff that we're going to be starting to do, or new stuff like just in general in the industry coming?
I'm taking it sort of as
whatever
on the horizon.
To.
Yeah, choose your own adventure. I don't know. Ask Mr. Ray. He knows. The only new development that I know of right now as far as like a new steel or new anything like that is MagnaMax is supposed to be coming. And I really don't know that much about it. I just know it's coming. And I don't know with the whole Crucible situation, where it's at. I know it was developed. And Crucible did a test pour and all that sort of stuff. And I think Spyderco a couple weeks ago did like their mule batch in it. And
they're from Niagara. I forget what the time frame was, but it's got to be coming up here within the next couple of months. From what they told me, they would be starting to have it. It was like late this year.
Oh, okay, cool.
That they were planning on having it. Now, how available it's going to be, I don't know.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Spyderco is big enough that they probably got some of the first dibs on it or whatever. So, from what Niagara told me, it was going to be late this year that they were looking to start rolling it out.
Nice. Do you know anything more about that steel? Because I really haven't. I haven't looked at the formula. I don't know if it's a tool steel or stainless, or I don't know anything.
I've been meaning to either try to find some information or just ask them at Niagara about it, and I need to. But it was kind of, I had too many other irons in the fire and too many other pressing problems to worry about that I hadn't paid that much attention to it. But I do need to, look at it, especially since I've got enough Magna Cut on hand or on order to last for a while. So I can probably start looking and thinking about some other stuff now.
Which y'all used some XHP a little while back.
Yeah, we did. We've got basically, so we get all the Magna Cut sent out to Peter's Heat Treat for heat treat. It's a more complicated steel, a little bit more complicated to heat treat and all that. To be honest, everybody's so picky about the hardness on them and everything that, like, I would just rather send them to the professionals and get them done. XHP is a steel that I'm comfortable heat treating in house, and we're not going to do it in large volumes, but that was essentially for one thing, so that we could offer something different, because not everybody wants Magna Cut all the time. Some people don't ever want Magna Cut. There's a few haters out there, Black and Swag. I needed something at the time. We were having some trouble with, you know, like, we'd get hung up either with heat treat or somebody with running out of, you know, getting low on blades. And so I needed something that we could have that if we got low on blades, you know, heat treat got hung up for an extra couple of weeks or something, and we started running low on blades, that we could have some that we could just heat treat ourselves and skip the lead time, the turnaround time on those or whatever. So it was kind of
you're talking about a day or two, you know, for heat treat versus, you know, I'm guessing a week or 2 weeks.
Couple of weeks. Yeah we're usually on a couple of week turnaround on heat treat. So yeah, we could basically, it would still probably slow us down, but if we saw the bottleneck coming far enough ahead, we could go ahead and start heat treating them and, you know, and have them.
It's better to be using those. Slowed down a little bit instead of coming to a brick wall stop.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so it's kind of to have a little bit of variety, but also to give us a little bit of a cushion in case we needed something that we could pull off the shelf, heat treat and grind, you know, and within, like that, if we pulled them off the shelf, started heat treating them, you know, if we've got the blanks sitting out there ready, if we pulled them off the shelf and heat treated them, we could be grinding them and putting them in knives by, you know, either the next day or the most, you know, 2 days later.
Yeah.
So inside a week, we could go from unheat treated blanks to finished product. So that was our main thinking on that.
Yeah. Sweet. It came to mind because I said XHP.
Yeah. It was cool to do something new. And I want to do some other small runs of stuff too. I've had more than one person mention 3V. So we're probably going to start doing some of that kind of stuff too. Some very small runs of different steels too, to keep it mixed up.
Yeah. I mean, I think people like that. I mean, there's people that have a paramilitary 2 and 30 different steels because that's fun for them. So, the only other, I guess, new material I've seen lately is a company called GripX. It was formerly Grip Tech. It's a small-ish. I mean, I think he's moving into a new facility and hiring new employees and stuff, but it's sort of, there's rubber infused inside like a resin matrix or something like that. And it's an interesting material to work with. I've seen a lot of custom makers using it, and I haven't seen it too much in the,
This is not that crap we use that pissed me off
so
bad.
No, this is not. Okay. that was not good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. And then we'll tell what I'm talking about.
No, this is different stuff. You've probably seen it and just not know what it is, but it just looks like a bunch of little black dots, like rubber pellets, I guess, thrown into it. Yeah. They're very small and adds a really interesting texture. I've used a little bit of it, but it's not my Carta, so it wasn't my jam. That's just kind of how I roll. but yeah, that's the only other thing I've seen lately. I haven't really seen any new deployment methods. I mean, there's thumb studs, thumb holes, front flippers, back flippers, you know, and besides that, you get an automatic or a nail nick, I guess.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody will come up with something new, you know, a pinky flicker or something down the road. But it's, you know,
I got bored the other day in CAD and put like a opening hole, a thumb stud, a front flipper, and a, you know, regular flipper on one model just to kind of see what it looked like.
Some people would absolutely love it.
There are definitely people who just want all the ways. And I understand that. I used to sit and find out, you know, I can finger flick with every finger at one point. Now I've lost some dexterity, but gained some strength. So that's all good. So anyway, tell your rubber banana story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I don't remember the name of the stuff. And I don't really want to, like, dog it out anyway, but it was a material that
is
similar, but it was like, instead of being like little rubber pellets infused in it, it was like it was almost, I think it was like layers of rubber.
Yeah.
So kind of, like, I mean, all of this stuff that we're using, like micarta and G10 and all that, is essentially like layers of some sort of material or whatever that's in, you know, with layered with epoxy and really high pressure to make it a solid substance then.
Yeah.
So this had layers of like rubber in it, and it felt really cool. So when you ground into it and contoured a handle and stuff, like it felt, it wasn't like, it didn't feel like pure rubber, but I mean, it literally felt like a combination of G10 and rubber.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, what it was. So it was, you know, G10 rubber, G10 yeah, rubber,
like, but really, know. Really thin layers. Yeah. So like it's, you know, and so you'd hold it and it wasn't a squishy like rubber,
yeah,
but it was, but it had grip to it. So it felt like G10 with grippiness to it. I thought, man, and it should give a little better for special, like for bigger knives, like choppers and stuff. It should give you a little better, like shock absorption and stuff through it. You know, people have used horse stall mat for years on like competition knives and stuff for that reason. So really, I thought it was really cool material. And we've got a guy that we've worked with several times. He's a former SEAL and he does some charity stuff. And it was some knives for his, a charity event for him, some fixed blades we were doing. We were running that down to the wire on getting them done. And we glued up, we used that material because it was new, it was cool. I thought, you know, especially these guys are like, you know, most military minded folks or whatever. So cool gripping material like that, I thought would be awesome. We glued them up. We glued up the whole batch. It was several knives. I don't remember how many it was, but it was several.
30 maybe?
Something more. Like that.
And it was like right after we moved into the shop.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yeah, yeah. That was quite the intro into being in this shop.
Yeah.
And so we got them all glued up. And, you know, like the next day or whatever, once they had time to for the epoxy to set and everything, we got to looking at them, and they had gaps.
I thought we weren't going to glue them up to initially begin with. I thought we were just going to use the Gulso bolts.
I think we were. That's right. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, we were going to just use Gulso bolts. We weren't planning on using epoxy. I was going to make the handles detachable. Mm. We were going to use Gulso bolts, which are basically just like
a pivot.
A pivot, essentially. Yeah, like, yeah, it's two sides, male and female, that just screw together and hold it on there. So we went to screw them. So we fit everything up. Everything looked good. But then when we went to screw them together, there was gaps between the material and the tang. Mm. And no matter what we did as far as tightening those bolts, like you could not tighten them enough, like in between the bolts there was still gaps. And so yeah, I guess that we ended up having to then, we went to plan B,
yeah,
and had to epoxy all of them. Mm. And like I said, we were running really, really last minute on it, and they had to be done by a certain time to get to him for the event or the whole thing was useless.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that was that. If I had to use it again now, knowing that I needed just epoxy it from the get-go, it probably wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But at the time, it definitely was a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, it was rough because it was, you know, introduction into a new material, and all we got was issues.
Should have gone with something I was used to. Lesson learned.
These things happen.
Moving along.
All right. So, what is your favorite sheath material, and what is your favorite sheath design? Can you discuss methods of sheath retention, including pros and cons of each, and show some examples?
Woo.
I have some examples.
He's asking us to do homework and everything. Yeah, like, dude, you trying to work us.
I didn't think about this question when I brought these knobs, but I just so happened to have much examples of the things that we need. So favorite is a loaded question in terms of, you know, anything really, I guess. But if I had my druthers, I would probably say leather is my favorite sheath material. I generally prefer it in terms of the fact that, you know, I'm a custom maker at my core at the moment. So anything that doesn't scratch the blade is good for me. Yeah. And, you know, when you spend, you know, a couple hours of your life hand rubbing and etching, you know, especially like a Hamon or, you know, a Damascus or something like that, and then you put it in Kydex and it scratches it in about 2 minutes, that's rough. So leather generally doesn't do that. However, leather doesn't generally have the retention or the modularity that Kydex offers. So it's all about, you know, what you kind of deem as most important in your carry method. But yeah, generally, like, you know, a lot of people don't like a pouch leather style sheath like this. Just, you know, sort of drop in, you know, sort of that's old school in a lot of people's minds. I like it. I carry one. I've got a Mudlark on my hip right now. in that. But also in the front, I've got a Kydex sheath as well. So
he's just showing off.
I am a little bit, but you know, you know, there's pancake Kydex style like this. That's, you know, two pieces that have been smushed together on the knife and then riveted, which are, these are called eyelets actually, but essentially riveted together. That's how I made sheaths for a long time. Now I make them which, where they are taco style, where I take one piece of Kydex and fold it over. So it, essentially it eliminates these top eyelets here, just makes the sheath in general a little bit slimmer. With Kydex, you generally get a lot more retention. I mean, as far as it won't fly out, it won't do things like that. But with leather, you get less scratchy and, you know, it's sort of I tend to think of it a little more refined carry method. And, you know, nowadays they've got all the pocket sheaths with different, you know, Ulti clips and, you know, DCC clips and all those other sorts of attachments. And so, yeah, I just rambled a bunch about sheaths.
What he said.
Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, so I like the, from strict, and again, it all goes back to whether we're talking about for carrying them, for working with them, for making them, whatever. Be honest with you, I don't like making any of them. So there's that. I'm not really a sheath maker. I would love to maybe have like especially like for leather. I'd love to have like an in-house, you know, sheath maker at some point, but it ain't going to be me. So, I really like, other than straight up Kydex, like this one, I was just looking at this Miller Brothers that he brought, is cool. It's technically a Kydex sheath, but it does have leather. It's got kind of a combination. So it's got leather, attachment and stuff. It's got a belt loop and got some other, you know, fire steel loop and stuff like that. That's actually out of leather. So I really like the looks and the functionality of the kind of hybrid. Some other sheaths that I really like that I'm actually planning on using, as soon as we can get more fixed blades going, are the Chattanooga Leatherworks sheaths. They do, I think they're, I don't know if they, do they use some Kydex in theirs? I can't remember. But they're primarily leather sheaths, but they're not made really like a traditional leather sheath like these where they're just stitched together. Mm-hmm. Like they have hardware, they use bolts and stuff too, along with the stitching and stuff. They just got kind of more of like a tactical, industrial kind of look to them that I really like, and they're really functional too. So yeah, they would everything, basically echo everything he said. So Kydex sheath, great for retention, all that kind of stuff, but and great to have, you know, really easy to have access points or, you know, attachment points to them so you can have more flexibility with what you're going to do with your attachment stuff. But the trade-off is most of the time they're going to be rougher on your blade as far as the finish. So, yeah. But leather also, you know, you run the risk of if you put a knife in there with some moisture or something like that, be pretty rough on your finish too and end up with stains on it. So
Kydex can be that way too.
It can. It but, can. Yeah.
But yeah, leather will definitely absorb moisture and, you know, can be harmful to, you know, non-stainless or if you're in a wet environment, if you're, you know, just got done skinning a deer and you put it back in a, you know, leather sheath, it's, you know, that it's just right. Gonna, I don't care what, you know, unless it's H1 from Spyderco, it's probably going to have some corrosion that comes along with it.
And the sheath itself on the inside is going to be harder to clean too, whereas you can actually wash out a Kydex sheath and then let it dry really good. You can, it's kind of hard to do that with a leather sheath. So
definitely. But yeah, anyway. I like how a lot of the modern, you know, makers are doing some like sort of hybrid stuff to eliminate some of the variables. Like, you know, with a traditional leather sheath like this, you put your belt through it, you put it on your belt and that's how you carry it. Some guys are using like the eyelet method to sort of put their sheaths together now. And that way you have a little bit more modularity. You can put a scout loop on it. You can put a Ulti clip on it if you want to put it in your pocket or whatever. I like that sort of new hybrid style, I guess, cause you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
But one thing I did want to mention while we're on sheaths is some of the people out there that are making sheaths today have seemed to have forgotten the purpose of a sheath, and that is to not cut yourself, to have a safe way to carry your knife while you, you know, and not cut yourself. Same thing as, you know, a detent in a folding knife. The whole purpose, it has that detent, even though we like it and it's clicky and it's the action and all that. The whole reason we make it stay closed is so you don't bleed. But there seems to be a few leather makers out there that seem to have forgotten that. And yeah, just be wary of that in your adventures out there in the knife world, I guess I would say. Yeah. I just wanted to kind of get that on.
Yeah, first and foremost, it needs to protect you first and the knife second, and then the rest of it after that is a lot of personal preference.
Yeah, you need to make sure your leather's thick enough that it's not going to be stabbed through easily.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right, we got time for probably about one more.
Well, I think that's it from Mr.
From all Mr. our Ray. Homework is done?
I believe so. I mean, we may have some other questions in the. I don't have my thing queued up that I normally have. I normally have a little side notes bar with all my old questions.
That's fine. Yeah. Well, since we skipped straight to the questions and didn't do any, you know, what's going on in the shop or anything like that, we can just do that at the end here then. So what have you had going on last week or so?
Been making fixed blades this week. I've been working on a bunch of doing some compound grinds and doing some, like, my compound scales, I guess you would call them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, bolstered scales
I saw some of your pictures.
Yeah, been playing with epoxy all week is what it feels like, and grinding blades.
Dirty week.
Yeah, for sure. Monday was a good grinding day. It had to, unfortunately, end short because I only had one 220 grit belt and zero 400 grit belts. So I was, unfortunately, my good grinding day got stopped. You know, some days you're just your own. You're in there, you're dialed in. And then, you know, you kind of have to run into a wall the day either ends or you run out of stuff to grind. But unfortunately, I ran out of belts, but I got everything ground that I needed to get ground. I just, you know, still had to go back and touch them up after that yesterday whenever I got belts in, but you know, it wasn't too big of a problem. Had to get back in the groove a little bit and find out where I was on Monday, especially with those duplex grinds, having to you know, match all those lines from side to side. You've got essentially four plunges and four, you know, top lines and, you know, all that, trying to match it up and marry it up, and that's always fun.
You better be on top of your game when you're doing those, for sure.
Yeah, I have a tendency to walk in there and be a little too willy-nilly at times. Yeah. But those I have to kind of dial in and focus.
Right.
But what have you been up to this week?
Not a lot. I was on vacation, which, you know, we said that that's why we didn't have the podcast last week. So we just got back. I was just back at work for the first day yesterday on Thursday. We're recording this on Friday. So got back, kind of evaluate everything. Shop's kind of torn apart right now. We've got actually two things coming Monday. I just found out about the second one a few minutes ago. We've got a new CNC coming, a new mill. It's just another one like we already got. We're just adding more capacity. So got one more of those coming Monday being delivered. And hopefully by the end of the week, we'll be completely set up with it running and all. Electrician's got to come in after it's delivered and get it hooked up. And then the Hoztech has got to come out and do his thing and set it up. And then we can start actually running it and making parts. So hoping by the end of the week, we'll be making parts on it. And then we've ordered a new just a blast cabinet thing. If it works out good and all that, I'll talk about it and we'll go in depth on it more. Whatever, it's supposed to be a somewhat automated blast cabinet that we've been waiting on. That is also going to happen to get here Monday too. Looks like so. Yeah. Big day of moving, and that's not a really big piece of equipment, but still.
It could be huge. I'm excited to see
be a huge impact. It's not a big, physically big piece of equipment. That could help us out a lot if it can, you know, basically it's kind of like putting parts in the microwave or whatever. Like you put them in there and supposedly and set the timer and then come back and they're supposedly done and ready to go a few minutes later. So that could, you know, that time somebody standing there at the blast cabinet manually blasting it, that's, you know, 15 especially, minutes while it's going, that's 15 minutes they can be doing something else.
Probably help their mental health too, because I'll tell you what, blasting clips is not fun.
No,
they're like small parts little and stuff bitty. Like that. Yeah, that
you barely have room to hold on to them, you know, and blasting like your fingers are in the way, you're in there with big old bulky gloves, rubber gloves. It's not fun. It should definitely if it works as advertised, then it'll help a lot. As a matter of fact, if it works as advertised, we may end up with two or three of them before it's over with.
Yeah.
Just to be able to keep capacity going. So got that going. And of course we have a big, by the time you see this, it will have already happened, but we have a big Dixon drop coming up tomorrow on Friday. So I'm anxious to see how that goes. That's today. Yeah. Going today. So yeah, my bad. But like I said, it'll be over by the time you guys hear or see this. So doesn't matter, but yes. So today coming back off vacation at the end of the week has got me totally messed up. But yeah, so today we have our first drop of Frag Dixon. So I'm really excited about that. I'm really, really tickled with how they've come out. So I'm excited. I'm really excited about that. But that's pretty much it. So we're just going to keep hammering down on mainly on Dixon's Frags and the smooth ones. We're doing some more engraved ones and got some other stuff coming down the line in the not too distant future, but it's still too many chances for plot twists in between that now and then to be talking about them. So
yeah,
we'll see. Of course,
what was that guy that did dang it, that movie with Bruce Willis and the kid who could see dead people?
Oh yeah.
That director that loved plot twist.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That's how the knife making world operates. It's like you're in a M. Night Shyamalan.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a knife making.
Yeah.
I guess just owning a business. You're in an M. Night Shyamalan movie all the time, just waiting for the plot twist.
Pretty much.
So, yep. Yeah.
That's right. So we'll see how it goes. So if we don't have too many horror stories and we got some more new stuff, I'm on a mission to expand our catalog, expand our offerings and stuff. So, and part of that starts with getting more capacity for machines. And next podcast we do, anyway, down the road, when we talk like this again, we're going to probably, I got some stuff I want to talk about some realizations I've had about machine time and stuff and pricing. I've talked about it some before, but it's become very apparent with starting to do different models and stuff like that. Like it's pretty eye opening. So anyway, all right. I think we're probably about to have to wrap it up because we have a prior commitment that we got to take care of here and you'll know about that soon.
Yeah.
Let's just say the Knife Freak Show is going places.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We're going places for sure. But yeah.
All right. So we do have Salt Lake City Blade West coming up. We do. Chase is, like he said before, he won't be there, but I'll be there. Plan on having, besides our knife stuff, we're planning on having some show merch there. So please come by and get that. And I don't think we're planning on selling anything. It'll all be from freebies. So make sure you come by and, get some stuff to help you represent the show and, tell us what was good, bad, and ugly about it.
Yeah. For sure.
Good, bad, and ugly.
Hey,
I'm just kidding. All right. So on that note, since I'm down to the kindergarten level here, I guess we'll wrap it up. We appreciate you guys. And we'll should have another episode out next week. And hope you have a great week.
Yeah. Any comments, questions, or concerns, hit us at the email, knifefreakshow@gmail.com, and let your freak flag fly.